Let's go. Ready? From the top. My favorite shows on TV have 12 minutes of advertising.
I can't get behind that kind of time.
Eat quickly, drive faster, make more money now. I can't get behind that.
My kids say, he said to me, and I'm like, and he's like, and she's like,
it's all he's all, she's all.
I can't get behind that kind of like English. That'll be 6 to 8 weeks before delivery.
All right, so when you hear that music... Music, you know, is an expansive term. When you hear a William Shatner and Henry Rollins singing or chanting or whatever they're doing, that means we're going to do one of our shows where there's no guests booked. It's just booked. It's just you and me and phone calls. And the phone call should go to 888-720-WNPR. You may ask or tell me anything. 888-720-9677. And I am a little bleary today because I had to do the early morning fundraising thing. And I mean, obviously, I have no business whining about this. For example, I mean, Cat Pastor is in here, and Lori Mack, you know, they start their days way, way earlier than that. The only thing that I can say, and I get up pretty early anyway, there's something about like having to go here and be on the air and sort of almost quasi make sense that is just, I find very taxing. I find very taxing to do, and then like to do this later. Anyway, I'm just saying, I'm already excusing myself for mistakes I will make over the course of this show. That's what I'm doing. And I'm also, so when I went in today, what was on my mind mainly at 6:30 in the morning were Steve Belichick's upsetting and very odd tongue movements in last night's telecast. And so Jeff Cohen, my friend Jeff Cohen, who's the news director here, despite being the news director, he was not on top of the Steve Belichick tongue story. And so he didn't know what I was talking about. And then he looked it up. And then it was he was upset because it was in his head now. And what I'm saying to you is don't look up Steve Belichick's tongue if you don't know what I'm talking about unless you are prepared to have that image be in your mind for the rest of the day. And it will not make you a happy person. All right. So the other – well, anyway, there's so many other things to say about this. But we're going to move on here. And I'm going to talk about a few things. And then eventually you guys are going to decide what you want to talk about. Call up somebody who doesn't listen to the show and have them call in. I want to know what they want to talk about. So anyway, the number is 888-720-WNPR, 888-720-9677. I want to say also, I went a little while ago to publicize on the social medias the fact that we were doing Ask or Tell Me Anything show today, and it was impossible to do that because Facebook was down, and so is Instagram and WhatsApp. I don't know what that's all about because obviously Facebook is having hard times right now. They're in a lot of trouble. More trouble than usual, I think. I feel as though this is different. At least here in this country, the current crisis for Facebook, driven somewhat by the remarkable revelations of this whistleblower from formerly inside Facebook, Frances Haugen is her name. I think it's different. I think they really have kind of a larger problem. And I think one of the reasons they have a larger problem is if you watched Haugen on 60 Minutes last night or have read any of the coverage of her, the stuff that she's got. And she's got thousands of pages of documents, internal documents that she got out of Facebook. What's clear is that Facebook is not only kind of indifferent to and maybe even antipathetic toward doing anything about some of the hate speech and misinformation and calls to violence that occur on its on Facebook, but also kind of indifferent to like this more subtle thing of the psychological damage being done to people, particularly young people whose body images or just senses of self are actively and aggressively being pulled apart, most notably on Instagram. They don't care about that either. So, and what's really remarkable is, I mean, one of the most upsetting things about what I'm about to share with you is the use of the word action as a verb. But Haugen, who copied tens of thousands of pages of Facebook internal research, says that they're lying to the public about making significant progress against hate, violence, and misinformation. One study, this is an internal study that she found from this year, says we – And this is, we estimate that we may action as little as 3 to 5% of hate in about 0.6% of what they call V and I, which is violence and incitement. I like the fact that they have sort of an internal shorthand term for violence and incitement as it occurs on their own site. Anyway, they action as little as 3.5%, 3 to 5% of hate and about 0.6% of 1% of violence and incitement on Facebook, despite being the best in the world at it. So the internal studies say, we could do this so much better about this. We're like really good at it, you know, but we're not doing it. And she talked about the fact that really, you know, all of the negative stuff, all the stuff that kind of freaks us out about Facebook, that's really a key to engagement. You know, it really does engage people a lot more. People use Facebook more because that stuff is there. So anyway, what wound up being the most publicized thing about all this last week? What was like talked about endlessly on social media and turned into columns and stuff like that? It would be our own senator, Richard Blumenthal. We have that Blumenthal clip, right? All right, let's go for it. This is what everybody took away. I mean, here is Facebook. Their head is in the jaws of this thing in a way that Facebook rarely is getting caught. And this is what people got excited about.
Will you commit to ending Finsta?
Senator, again, let me explain. We don't actually do Finsta. What Finsta refers to is young people setting up accounts where they want to have more privacy. You refer to it as privacy from their parents. What in my interaction with teens, what I found is that they sometimes like to have an account where they can interact just with a smaller group of friends.
Well, Finsta is one of your Finsta is one of your products or services. We're not talking here about Google or Apple. It's Facebook, correct?
Finsta is slang for a type of account.
Okay, will you end that type of account?
I'm not sure I understand exactly what you're asking.
Okay, so a few things here. First of all, let me just bracket this by saying it's almost not a grandiose claim on my part to say I invented making fun of Dick Blumenthal. I mean, I started doing it like 25 years ago, and I'm sure I've made fun of him more than anybody has. But I mean, if you're going to make fun of Dick Blumenthal, you have to sort of do it the right way. Now, what happened here was all the sort of hip people on social media said, oh, well, that's not what Finsta is. Finsta is not a product. Here's this clueless, and this was inevitably attached to it, clueless old guy senator who didn't get it right and has made a fool of himself. And they spent more time talking about that at the end of last week than they did about what Facebook has effectively been caught doing. By the way, the person who was answering the question, Facebook's head of global safety, Antigone Davis. I love that first name. But that's who was answering that. A Facebook official was answering that question. Now, they're sort of right. Blumenthal seems to think that Finsta is some kind of identifiable product, whereas it's kind of a phenomenon. But that's the only real problem. And one thing that has happened in a lot of the coverage, including Kara Swisher's piece in the New York Times, is they omit the preamble. So he had a prepared preamble to this question. And he said, Finstas are fake Instagram accounts. Finstas are kids' secret second accounts. Finstas often are intended to avoid parents' oversight. Basically, Facebook depends on teens for growth. Facebook also knows that nearly every teen in the United States has an Instagram account. It can only add more users as fast as there are new 13-year-olds. So, I mean, here, and obviously this is prepared for him by a staffer and stuff like that, but he absolutely 100% identifies correctly what Finsta is. He says they're kids' secret second accounts. They're often intended to avoid parents' oversight. And then he's asking Facebook, I think what's a pretty legitimate question, although it was worded all wrong and it made him look really stupid. I mean, basically saying you have to do something about this. Will you commit to doing something about this, to making it? I mean, there are just in the same sense that leaked document had Facebook saying we're the best in the world at doing stuff like locating and suppressing calls for violence or misinformation or hate, but we're not going to do very much about it. Well, they're the best in the world at this. If they wanted to stop that phenomenon, they would, and they could. They have the capacity to do it. That's essentially what Blumenthal was very kind of ineffectively asking them about. And they absolutely could do that. Now, why wouldn't they do it? Well, one point that he seemed to be trying to make is that Facebook, in order to function as an engine for advertising, has to have high user counts. Facebook also owns Instagram. So Instagram kind of likes these duplicate accounts, these secret duplicate accounts, because it jacks up the numbers a little bit. So that's their disincentive to do anything about that particular problem. And I just want to sort of add one more thing to this. And then we'd, of course, love to hear your calls about this or any other topic. And the number is 888-720-WNPR. 888-720-9677. Actually, I've been in a little back and forth on the Twitters today with Kara Swisher from the New York Times about this, but if you're going to write a column taking down Blumenthal about this, I think in fairness, you have to say he did very accurately describe these accounts, what Finsta is, in his preamble. I mean, you can't just leave out the fact that he said, elsewhere in the conversation prior to making this kind of flub, that he said that these are kids' secret second accounts. And if you're not going to mention that, then you're kind of unfairly teeing him up. And then I also was kind of shocked by, but not shocked by, the headline for this. This is an opinion piece in the New York Times. And the headline was, I don't have it in front of me, but I think I can recite it. Angry old Paul shakes fist at internet. Well, I sort of feel like, I'm constantly amazed by how much sort of unchecked ageism goes on in media and social media. It is one of the remaining acceptable prejudices, although it's really not supposed to be. And right, there's federal legislation, essentially civil rights kind of protective legislation that is intended to protect from disparagement and from reduced opportunities to thrive in the world, to protect older persons. And that's why we have a term like ageism. And when you say angry old Paul shakes fist at internet, I mean, you're using the word old disparagingly. You're using it as, in fact, a kind of form of bigotry. And the New York Times wouldn't do a headline that says angry black Paul does something, blah, 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 or angry woman Paul does blah, 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 or angry gay Paul, blah, blah. We understand that it's not cool to use terms like that as part of a taunt that you're making. But it's also really shouldn't be okay to use old that way. I'm not saying I've never used it that way because I know I have. But I mean, I'm also kind of, and now that I am more in that category, I'm more keenly aware of it and much more sensitized to it. And I'm always amazed by it too. Like when I was teaching at Yale last year, my students, who were wonderful people and I liked them a lot, and they were very much products of the current woke culture where you are pretty careful about what you say, and you try not to say things that disparage, legitimately protected classes of person. They were like the most unrepentant ageists. I mean, to them, old and kind of out of it are almost perfectly overlapping circles. And they're very, very comfortable with that prejudice. I had one student who didn't do part of an assignment I'd given her that involved listening to certain political podcasts. And she said, I started to listen to that one, but everybody sounded old, so I didn't really want to do it. Thinking, that's not a reason not to do your work. Not only that, but once again, I mean, it really is the generation that's come of age here, Gen Z in particular, who are very, very keen on enforcing certain kinds of norms and justifiably so. They are keenly aware that casual racism has to go, casual sexism has to go, casual homophobia has to go, casual ableism has to go, and pick two or three others. But they're so comfortable with casual ageism. It's just like it just not anywhere on their radar screen. They're just completely blind to it. And, you know, I mean, I don't think it's this huge moral crisis in America. But I also feel kind of over-policed on some of this other stuff. I feel like I'm looking around and I'm seeing people I know get canceled over mistakes they make on some of this other, you know, very, very tricky terrain. Because, you know, sometimes with the best of intentions, they say something that's unacceptable, or they make a joke or something, and it's taken, you know, as a real attack or offense. When I brought this up, by the way, with the author of the piece, and I know that as a columnist myself, I know that we don't write our own headlines. We almost never do. I said, you know, I asked Swisher on Twitter, isn't that kind of ageist? And she said, yes, but it was tongue in cheek. It was meant tongue in cheek. And I'm thinking, well, that's not an excuse we ever let anybody get away with. That's what Trump used to say when he would say something horrible, right? He would say, that was a joke. It was a joke and you didn't get it. I mean, tongue-in-cheek is not, you don't get to walk away from something. I mean, you can say, look, I understand that that was kind of ageist and that was probably a mistake or something like that. Or you can say, I was trying to make a certain kind of point. And the other thing about this, as long as I'm on this little tear, is I just, you know, although, as I say, I kind of invented making fun of Dick Blumenthal. So there's certain things you can make fun of him about. You could say robotic. You could say kind of opportunistic about media and stuff like that. I mean, you know, the old joke was he would, if he couldn't find another microphone, he'd just pull into the drive-thru at Burger King and talk on that one because he likes to be, you know, in the media and stuff. Yeah, there's things like that. But angry old Paul? That's Dick Blumenthal. It just really doesn't fit him. I mean, you would write that headline and sign off on it as a headline for your column if you didn't know anything about Dick Blumenthal. In fact, I can tell when Dick Blumenthal is angry, but I'm convinced that almost nobody else can. You have to listen very carefully to the content of his words to know if he's angry. But that's like it's not on brand at all. That's not his, angry is not Blumenthal's brand. Anybody who's followed him for a decade or two knows that. So I don't know. I just thought the New York Times was really weird about Dick Blumenthal anyway. But this is further evidence of it. All right. So I'm just babbling away here. Nobody's really calling in. We didn't really publicize the fact that we were doing this. I'm not bothered by that. But I would love to talk to you anyway about whatever you want to talk about. The number is 888-720-WNPR, 888-720-9677. And we'll take a break.
Why do you really care who's trending? Or is there something you're defending? Get a life, is it that empty and sad? Or are you after something you can't have? You kiss the girls and run away. Now you won't come out to play. Why you on Facebook?
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford HealthCare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford HealthCare. A lot of people struggle with sleep apnea and with CPAP machines. Dr. Carl Muller, a head and neck surgeon with Hartford Hospital, describes Inspire, a surgical alternative to the CPAP approach.
Only about 60% of patients can tolerate CPAP real well. Inspire is a surgical alternative to CPAP. It's an outpatient surgery. It takes about 2 hours. And essentially what it does is it picks up when you're taking a breath and sends a 2-second electrical pulse to the tongue, which causes the tongue to stick out a little bit and stiffen and prevent the airway from collapsing.
Hartford Hospital has performed more than 200 Inspire therapy surgeries. If you've tried and failed with CPAP, you could be a candidate for this minimally invasive procedure.
Patients with moderate to severe sleep apnea are candidates. There is a weight criteria, so you have to have a body mass index below 35, and you have to have tried and failed CPAP.
To learn more, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
Hi, this is Colin McEnroe. You're listening to a podcast right now. You probably know that. But if you were listening on the air, you'd also know we're in the middle of a fun drive. And even though you're not listening on the air, you're listening to a podcast. That doesn't change the fact that we need your support. And one way that you can support this show that you maybe even love or at least like is to visit ctpublic.org/donate and make a donation today. Thanks for everything that you do already. We are very grateful.
Join Connecticut Public and Fairfield County's Community Foundation for the In Community Speaker Series, May 2nd, featuring New York Times Magazine journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project. Jones will talk about her work covering racial injustice and the legacy of slavery on our culture, our politics, and our institutions. The event starts at 6:30 p.m. at District Music Hall in Norwalk. Tickets at ctpublic.org/speakerseries.
There was a woman in Georgia, didn't feel just right. She had fever all day and chills at night. Now things got worse, yes, a serious bind. In times like this, it takes a man of his style, like getting out of a vine. A doctor of the heart and a doctor of the mind.
All right, now we're starting to get calls, which is a problem because in about 8 minutes or 7 minutes, we're going to go to a fundraising break. But I'm glad to get the calls anyway. John's. We'll take John's call right now. I was going to talk about Dr. Sue McIntosh. I will not fail to talk about Dr. Sue McIntosh before getting off the air today. I'm fascinated by Dr. Sue McIntosh on so many different levels. But since people are calling in, let's talk to John from Newington. Hi, John.
How you doing?
Okay.
I've witnessed Mr. Blumenthal through the years over the state of Connecticut, probably for 30 years. And I found the most dangerous place in the state of Connecticut is not the inner cities, it's not Bridgeport, it's not Hartford. It's in between Richard Blumenthal and the camera.
Right. No, that's one of the many old tags that's been put on him. And it's a joke that's been applied to other people. But and I actually think that's kind of true and kind of fair. Although in Blumenthal's defense, I've also been in situations where there's never been anybody, except for Nancy Wyman, willing to show up at as many different like rubber chicken dinners and march in as many parades and go to, I don't know. He just does this stuff. But I've sort of seen situations where somebody will come up to him and go, hey, there's a veteran who lives two blocks away and he's in a wheelchair and he can't get over here and blah, blah, you know. And then, you know, very, very quietly, Blumenthal will go over and find that person and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. I like making fun of Dick Blumenthal, but I also I also recognize that you know, most of the time, I mean, what was sort of weird about the attack that was directed on Blumenthal, it came from people who were taking a break from attacking Facebook because it was more fun to attack this old politician who'd made this goof, you know? And as a result, Facebook got the day off, basically. They were really in the process of being torn apart the Senate inquiry, you know, with this huge cache of new whistleblower documents. And instead, the people who at least nominally claim they want to do something about this problem, you know, whipped into him, ripped into Blumenthal rather than ripping into Facebook. All right. So here's Cynthia in East Hampton. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Because I'm actually, okay, cool. So no, I actually called in while I was driving listening to you. And I had read the article that you're talking about, and I totally agree with you. And this is the one thing that makes me crazy about the New York Times, even though I've grown up reading it. I no longer subscribe to it because there's a lot of this sort of crazy, a little off-kilter thing that happens with the New York Times and some of their articles and their headings. So, and I agree with you. This is what happens. We get off topic, which is important, which is about Facebook and the papers that were released. And instead, you know, I find the media and other people sort of grab on to this kind of thing regarding Blumenthal. So I just wanted to say to you, I agree with you, and I'm glad to hear you brought it up because it's the damn truth. That's all.
All right. Thanks for your call. And happy motoring on Long Island. And that was East Hampton, Long Island, not East Hampton, Connecticut. And since we had one Cynthia, let's have another Cynthia. This may even be a Cynthia I know, Cynthia in Farmington. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Colin. Yes, it's me. First off, I wanted to say I agree with you on your take on Richard Blumenthal. I think that what got skirted over is the fact that he was trying to protect people and that everyone got hung up on the fact that he truly did not use his words well. But I also wanted to ask you a question. This is something that is, I want your take on this, because I've been, every time I turn around, this question keeps coming up in my mind, and that is, why in a world that
we build, why do we build everything to be not nice to people? Why are these systems put in place and everything in the end ends up screwing other people? So just a few examples are our criminal justice system, where even if you have someone who has been incarcerated wrongfully and that they are totally innocent and have been proven to be innocent, why is it if they don't meet all these certain requirements that are just these really dumb legal requirements, they can't be released because, you know, the system is set in place for that. And so the system is not serving people. The system just continues to serve itself. Also, you know, another this is like a thing we see daily. Why is it that when you're a pedestrian, you are out there worried about cars hitting you, and then 10 minutes later, you're out in a parking lot in your own car, and you're willing to run down any other pedestrian? I mean, it's just this weird human nature thing, but I feel like the world should not be set up for people in cars. We should be putting people first, because somehow our base natural instincts make us not regard our fellow humans as our fellow humans. So I could probably go on and on, but I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I do have a few, and then we're going to go to a break here. First of all, so nice to hear your voice, Cynthia. Cynthia's a friend of mine. I think you have to deal with all of these things kind of separately. One of the things that's sort of true about the American criminal justice system is it's really a lot about punishment. And if you compare it, like when Malloy was governor, he was really trying to understand more how other kinds of criminal justice systems work, often because he was very smartly advised by Mike Lawler, who knows a lot about these things. And, you know, we give lip service to the idea of rehabilitation, and there certainly are places where it's going on. But we're into punishment. We really like to punish people that we think are bad people. And there's a whole bunch of different reasons for that. But it's going to be very difficult for the United States to give up the norm of punishment, even though we recognize at some level that keeping people incarcerated for longer periods of time under bad circumstances with very few self-improvement programs and stuff like that, you know, it costs a lot of money and it doesn't accomplish very much. But still, we like to punish people, and that's very much ingrained in the American temperament, I think, especially, at least compared to Western Europe. And then in terms of cars, the thing to always remember about cars are an extension of our bodies. We basically, when we're in a car, we think our body is the size of the car. And so if something hits the car, it's like it hit our body. If it's in the way of the car, it's in the way of our body. So whenever we climb into a car, not only does our view of the rest of reality change, our view of ourselves also changes. We think we now are that size. We are this you know, huge insect encased in this metal carapace, and we behave accordingly. All right, we have to take a break. We're going to have some people come on, very nice people, I'm sure. I don't know who it is. But they're going to ask you to support the station. Do it now during our show, because it really kind of helps in terms of the great ledger that is kept. We couldn't stand to see our children shot dead in the streets. When I finally took a knee, them crackers took me out the league. Now I'm not much for games, but I play for keeps. You can make a pledge by calling 1-800-584-2788 or going online to ctpublic.org. Thanks for listening to the Colin McEnroe Show here on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Patrick Scahill here with Katie Talarski. I'm obviously, Katie, a big, big fan of the Colin McEnroe Show. This is a program that I used to work on several years ago. And it's one that's still near and dear to my heart, one that I still listen to very, very frequently, and one that I'm still amazed by when it comes to sort of the variety of topics that are discussed every single week on this show. Sometimes it's serious, sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's somewhere in between. Sometimes it's all those things at once, and that's really the beauty of this program. So if you value it, please do make a pledge right now, 1-800-584-2788 or ctpublic.org.
That's right. Colin McEnroe is a bit of a national treasure, I'd say, and we are so lucky to have him here at Connecticut Public Radio and his team, again, just putting together these fascinating conversations, as you mentioned. Some recent ones that I'll throw out there that they've talked about: the art of gossip, 55 years of Star Trek, the enduring appeal of boy bands, the multiplicity of the multiverse, the mysteries of Plum Island, unicorns, all sorts of things. I mean, I think their mandate is sort of, you know, let's find a topic that might be impossible to talk about for an hour, and like, let's figure out how to do it and make it as interesting as we can. And again, sometimes they succeed. Sometimes it's, you know, it's questionable, but we have, you know, it's fun in the process. And hopefully as a listener, you are enjoying, you know, being along for the ride, learning about all of these fascinating topics, like glass, a whole hour on glass that they did recently. So, so interesting. Call and support Colin and his team, 1-800-584-2788 or ctpublic.org.
You know, I initially thought you said it was a whole hour on grass, and I think that's probably because I'm trying to grow grass in my front yard. And I'm like, that's actually not.
Done that.
Yeah, that's probably something that has been done. But it was a show on glass, and it was it was wonderful, and made me think about, you know, this kind of everyday material in a very kind of large, more philosophical way. Mainly because they had a really smart person on who was talking about it in that sort of context. So that's what Colin and his team do. They make, you know, sort of the everyday, sort of the mundane become kind of bigger, special, interesting. And that's a very cool thing and something that they can do because you make it possible. 1-800-584-2788, 1-800-584-2788, or ctpublic.org.
And the Colin McEnroe Show team is in the process of hiring a new senior producer. You know, we'll be going through a new rebranding soon. This is the second decade of the Colin McEnroe Show. So a lot of exciting things to come. I think lots of exciting projects like Pardon Me, where they're diving deep into presidential impeachment. You know, there's so much more to come with this team. We cannot do it without your support. So please call us again, support Colin McEnroe Show, support all the programming here on Connecticut Public Radio. The web address, ctpublic.org, or 1-800-584-2788.
So we do have plenty of ways to say thanks to you for making that pledge. One of maybe the most obvious or most sort of, relevant right now would be the Colin McEnroe Show ceramic mug. This is for a pledge of $6 a month. A wonderful mug. It's got Colin's face on it. So, you know, you can wake up to that every morning, which is a wonderful thing, a wonderful thing for you to have. I don't know if Colin would agree with that, but at any rate, here we are. Again, that's for a pledge of $6 a month. We do have a photo of it on our website. Personally, I think it's great. I love it. I love the colors on it. I love the picture of Colin. I think it's a really fun mug. My wife and I actually have another sort of piece of CT Public swag. It's a bag, one of those shopper bags. It's got Colin's face on it. Mm-hmm. And we proudly, you know, take it to the store when we go grocery shopping. And it's a great way for people to know, like, hey, okay, you know, you value this program. You value all the news and information you're getting. You value Colin and his team and all the stories that you hear here. So again, that's for a pledge of $6 a month, 1-800-584-2788 or ctpublic.org.
That's right. It's your opportunity now during this fall membership campaign to help support the programming, to help become a part of this community that brings you great, great programming like the Colin McEnroe Show. So step forward now and help us reach our goals, our hourly goals. So important. 1-800-584-2788 or ctpublic.org. And thanks.
And welcome back. So if you're listening on the podcast, you probably didn't hear the fun break, right? We don't put the fun break on the podcast. I think that's right. Oh, maybe you did hear it. So I just want to say that if you did hear it, one of the people doing the fundraising was Patrick Scahill, who said he used to work on this show. No, Patrick built this show. He was the original producer of this show. It almost cost him his life. And that may be why he minimizes his involvement now. But Patrick and I put this show together back in 2009. It was hard to start a show with just two people working on it. Now I'm fortunate to have a bunch of people. And I do want to say that, first of all, I want to thank Kat Pastor. She's our technical producer today and every day. And Jonathan McPants is in the studio with me and Kat screening calls right now at 888-720-WNPR, 888-720-9677. You might have heard just now or at some time in the past that we're in the process of hiring a senior producer. And I'm laughing because it has taken us 3 months to hire a senior producer to replace Betsy Kaplan. But where do you find another Betsy Kaplan? And we're not quite ready to announce it yet, but we are verging towards it. And I believe what we're going to do actually is rent Dunkin' Donuts Stadium, and we'll actually roll out the senior producer there and, you know, have like just a huge thing because that's, you know, to make it kind of commensurate with the amount of time it took us to hire a senior producer. I do want to thank everybody, and a bunch of people did, including a few people who are whose names are known to me, people who called in anyway during that and said and supported the show. So I also want to say that apropos of what was said during the fundraising break about the kinds of shows that we do, it's absolutely the case that our whole idea with the Colin McEnroe Show is to kind of reach for the stars and sometimes not quite get them, you know? So it's fine with us if we do a show that seems kind of overly ambitious or like a crazy idea that might not work. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. But anyway, a couple of shows that I'm excited about tomorrow, because in fact, oh, and this gives me a chance to set this topic up for Colin too. Starting tomorrow, you know, this, for those of us who are in New England, and that's most of the people listening right now, not all of them, but most of the people listening are New Englanders. You know, there's something about a Red Sox-Yankees confrontation. And of course, this particular thing that's going to happen on Tuesday, a one-day winner-take-all confrontation. It's sort of, you know, it does sort of bring back or boil up all of the tribalism that goes around with this. And so I'm always happy to talk about that particular kind of tribalism, although it feels increasingly antiquated. I mean, I think the idea of a Yankees-Red Sox rivalry, I mean, it's still there and it's still real. I don't think it, and if you've seen the new Spike Lee documentary, which is sort of about the sort of arc, first of all, has an impossible-to-remember title, and it's sort of, it kind of backwards traces this arc from the pandemic back to 9/11. But Spike Lee is like really into the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry and really kind of reveling in the idea, back to Cynthia's question of why do we create a world in which meanness is venerated over non-meanness, over niceness. He's really into the idea that if you're a Red Sox fan at Yankee Stadium, you're going to get beat up. Like he's kind of, he thinks that's really great. But to me, I feel like this whole thing is sort of getting less and less important. And I'm a Red Sox fan. I really care about how the game comes out, but I don't hate the Yankees. Anyway, happy to talk about those things with you at 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WNPR if you were into the alphanumeric thing. Anyway, tomorrow, apropos of all that, we are re-airing a show that we did about Ted Williams. It's a really good show. If you've never heard it before, I'm just telling you. I wouldn't say that if I didn't mean it. I think it's a really good show. And then on Wednesday, this is the kind of show that I think, you know, I'd like people to think about when they think about the kinds of shows we do. We're going to do a show, and I've been jonesing for this for months now, a show on the history and future of handshaking, you know, because obviously handshaking has kind of gone in a different direction. I mean, I think the truth is shaking hands didn't really, it wouldn't have really spread COVID very much because that's not how COVID spreads. I mean, getting close enough to somebody's mouth and nose to shake hands with them if they're not wearing a mask, that could have been a problem. But the actual touching of hands, probably not as big a problem. But, I mean, a lot of other disease does spread that way. And Ulysses Wu, who was for a long time the director of infectious disease at St. Francis, I think he's with Hartford Healthcare now, but as an infectious disease specialist, way, way before COVID, for years and years before COVID, Dr. Ulysses Wu did not shake hands with people just because he knew what he knew about how disease does spread, not COVID, but disease. And he didn't think that shaking hands was a healthy thing to do. He might be right. But anyway, we're going to do a whole whole show about the past, present, and future of shaking hands. That's on Wednesday. Then on Thursday, we're doing a show about the history of and the use of quotations. I am constantly using quotations and not being quite sure who said them. The other day I was saying in my house to various people, an army travels on its stomach. And I said, either Julius Caesar or Napoleon said that. It turns out like, probably Frederick the Great said it. But anyway, quotations attributed correctly and wrongly and stuff like that. So those are just like, you know, examples of some of the kinds of shows that we do here. And I hope you do enjoy them. All right. So what are we going to do here? We're going to take calls, 888-720-WNPR, 888-720-9677. I am at some point going to talk about Dr. Sue McIntosh. But not right now because Suzanne from West Hartford is going on the air with us. Hi, Suzanne. Hey. Are you still there? Yeah.
Hi. Yes, I am. Hi, Colin. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to let you know that on Sunday, October 10th, there's going to be a Walk Against Hate, and it's going to be held at the Watkinson School where you've recorded several episodes of your show in the Freshly Squeezed program.
Mm-hmm.
You can register at walkagainsthate.org, or you can come at 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday and register then. We've got some speakers. Jen Rosati from the Connecticut Sun will be speaking. They're partnering with the ADL to host the walk. Treasurer Sean Wooden is speaking. Deacon Art Miller is speaking. Students from Watkinson. I think it's going to be a great way for people to stand up against hate.
That does sound great. I'm so glad you're doing this. And it's right on point with what was being said by some of the callers before. So I'm with you on this. And I do enjoy, I can't say it with a straight face. Those commercials, the check commercials where Sean Wooden is there in his hoodie, like hanging around the house and stuff like that. Can I just say, and I like Sean Wooden, I think he's a good treasurer and all this stuff. Politicians, they don't have to do that, all right? That is, you are paying, you the taxpayer are paying for what is effectively a political commercial. I mean, lots of politicians before Sean Wooden, including Susan Bicewitz when she was Secretary of State and John Rowland famously when he was governor. And I'm sure there's lots of others, like these TV commercials basically where they explain something about what the government's doing. They don't have to be in these commercials. And it really is kind of, you know, like a political ad that we're paying for. But I do like Sean in his hoodie. I like he's just like chilling in the house and stuff like that. So all right. So I have to talk about Dr. Sue McIntosh before I run out of time. So I'm fascinated. So Dr. Sue McIntosh, if you don't recognize that name, is a retired Connecticut physician who has just had her license stripped away because she was and not for money, by the way, but she was making available to people forms where she would be essentially certifying an exemption from vaccination for them. So she was basically saying, you know, and so what you would do is you would write to her. I don't know if you had to enclose an SASE, but she would mail you these forms that would basically say that you didn't have to get vaccinated or it was like other stuff too. They had a sort of undercover investigator do this. And so the contents of the envelope included instructions for medical exemptions with the retired physician's full name, address, and contact information, plus forms entitled Medical Contraindications for Facial Masks, Medical Vaccine Exemption COVID, Medical Vaccine Exemption General, and exemption for routine invasive COVID testing. So she was prepared to give you an exemption even from getting tested for COVID, because we know how dangerous that is when people test you for COVID and how many religious mandates are violated too by COVID testing. So, but anyway, I have several thoughts about this, including the fact that the punishment that she's getting for this is that she's stripped of her license. She's a retired physician. That's my understanding. She's retired. And I know she's obviously kept up her license so she can send out these stupid forms to people. But it doesn't really seem like you're going to lose your license. You're a retired physician. I mean, it doesn't seem like the punishment really fits the crime that much. And I'm just sort of also – like I sort of get why people don't want to get vaccinated. I don't think it makes any sense at all. But I can – when they say, oh, I don't want to get vaccinated because of this. I have this medical concern. And then they explain something to you. And either it's outlandish and not really based on anything or over-reliant on the thoughts of Robert Kennedy or, you know, whatever. Or it's just they'll say, look – I feel like they rushed it, you know, they did Operation Warp Speed, I was a little uncomfortable, the FCC has only now officially approved one of the vaccines, blah, blah, blah. I said the FCC, didn't I? That was wrong. So, you know, only one of them has gotten actual federal approval. I get all that. It's wrong, but I understand why a person who was not completely crazy would say that. You know, masks being dangerous and being tested for COVID being dangerous enough so that you would need a medical exemption and could get a medical exemption, wow. I just feel like at this point the Red Queen is talking backwards, you know. But anyway, I do want to say that Sue McIntosh, you may be a bad apple, and that's not an original joke with me, but you're our bad apple. You're Connecticut's bad apple. And I guarantee you, well, I'm not going to guarantee this, but I do want to say that I worked at this other station for a really long time, for 16 years. I bet you there's somebody right now at WTIC is thinking, maybe Dr. Sue, like on Saturday afternoons or something, you know? Like there's some conservative radio station in Connecticut right now that's thinking, maybe we should give her a one-hour weekend show where she takes calls. Dr. Sue, you're on the air. Anyway, we take calls, 888-720-WNPR, 888-720-9677. All right, we can go, we can continue talking about driver pedestrian meanness. Hi, Michael from Ashford, you're on the air.
Hi, Colin, thanks. Listen, it's a subject I've thought about a lot, and, you know, I can accept being wrong, but I used to be a distance runner, so spent a lot of time on the roads and in races as well. And my theory is that being in motion is what brings out aggression among people, that runners are typically pretty pacifist people, but you'll notice it, you know, in a herd start of a high school cross country meet or road race, there are a lot of elbows being thrown, a lot of sort of unnecessary violence. And I think you see it in bike racing too, you know, at least on the television, that and I even think it generalizes to other animals, that dogs, when they're in motion, are more aggressive than if they're just sitting there, you know, being patted on the head. So
this is a really interesting theory. I mean, I would really have to think about this, but it's a really interesting theory. Well, I mean, it's also kind of reminding me, you know, of the old joke about the two guys who are running away from a lion, and one of them goes, "We'll never be able to outrun the lion." And the other guy goes, "I don't have to outrun the lion. I have to outrun you." You know, and so maybe that is sort of somewhere in there when people are running and they're thinking, well, if I can run faster than this guy, then the lion will eat him. I will say, though, that people in cars are kind of a different category because they can do so much more damage. And I will say that having bicycled elsewhere in the world, especially in France, I mean, I've bicycled in Paris, first of all, and I've bicycled going into the circle around the Arc de Triomphe. Excuse me, where I think there's 13 different little, you know, roads that kind of let out onto the circle around the Arc de Triomphe. So that's 13 angles from which Citroëns can come at you. And I actually didn't feel in very much danger because, you know, everybody in Europe bicycles and their grandmothers ride bicycles and their grandchildren ride bicycles. And it's just like, and they ride bicycles. And so they don't try to kill you. And if you're bicycling and they come up behind you in a car, they'll actually wait. They'll go slowly for a couple of minutes waiting for a good chance to go around you safely. And so there's something wrong with us. There's something weird about us that we don't do that. All right. I don't know what time. I'm sort of out of time, right, Kat? I think so, yes. The music would indicate to me that I'm out of time as well. So thanks to everybody who did call in. Sorry to James, I didn't get to you. But there'll be other times. There'll be other shows. I know that. And Dr. Sue McIntosh, talk to me. Give me a call. I think I can help you get that show.
Thanks for listening to the Colin McEnroe Show. I'm Katie Tularski here with Patrick Scahill, and we are asking for your support of this programming, 1-800-584-2788 or ctpublic.org. If you are a fan of Colin, if you are a fan of the eclectic, intelligent, in-depth interviews and programming that you hear every single day on the Colin McEnroe Show, we're asking you to step forward and support the show, support Connecticut Public Radio, and everything that we do here at the station. Call us now, 1-800-584-2788, or go online to ctpublic.org.
1-800-584-2788 or ctpublic.org. Those are the two ways to make your pledge. When you're on the website, you can obviously go to Colin's page, check all the great podcasts that he's had recently, all the great shows that he's had recently. And you can sort of take stock of, wow, this is a really interesting program with a lot of with a very, very diverse list of topics that they cover. So one way that we can say thanks to you for making that pledge to support Colin and his team and all the work they're doing to bring you that really, really long list of topics is the Colin McEnroe Show Ceramic Mug. This is for a pledge of $6 a month. And it's a great mug. It has Colin's face on one side. It's got the Connecticut Public logo on the other. It's a 16-ounce mug. And that's one way that you can we can say thanks to you for making the pledge. If you want to do a little bit more, if you want to give at the level of $12 a month, you can actually get a combo gift. This is a combination of three mugs for three of our local programs. Colin's mug is in there. The Where We Live mug with the wonderful new logo that Where We Live has is in that package as well, along with Audacious, Colin Kion Wolf's show. So that's another option for you. Again, both are on our website, ctpublic.org, or give us a call right now, 1-800-584-2788.
1-800-584-2788, or go online and see all of our thank you items at ctpublic.org. You are listening to Connecticut Public Radio because you're curious, you are interested in your community, and you care about people and what's happening in our world. And we're asking you to take that listening one step further and support this radio. It is not commercial radio. As you know, it is listener-supported radio, and we're only here because of support of generous people like you. So step forward now, support the Colin McEnroe Show, support Patrick Scahill in the newsroom and all of the folks that are bringing you news and storytelling every day. 1-800-584-2788 is the number to call. Again, you can see info on the mugs and all of our thank you items at ctpublic.org. 1-800-584-2788. And thank you so much.